It's Wisconsin Today.
And that sound you're hearing is an aphid eating a soybean plant in southern Wisconsin. As the small pear-shaped insect eats the plant, it causes damage and could even kill it.
The USDA estimates between 20 to 40% of global crop production is lost to pests annually. But UW-Madison entomologist Emily Bick may have a solution.
She invented the insect eavesdropper, which uses microphones to detect and spy on pests as they eat and cause damage.
Emily runs the original digital entomology lab at UW-Madison and is an assistant professor of precision pest ecology and extension specialist for field and forage crops. Emily, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
All right. What kind of things can we learn big picture by listening to insects as they munch away on our crops?
Part of the reason this type of sensor exists and other sensors like this are coming onto the market is because we have some really limited ways to learn about insects, right? Often I work in agriculture. We often use a sweep net or a butterfly net with like an extra thick canvas bag and go out and count. But there are a heck of a lot more insects and there aren't that many people that can go out and identify them. So the thought with this is for especially the insects that are hard to find, ones that are eating, boring down the stalk of a corn plant, feeding on the root zone, those borers, the root feeding insects, where it takes a heck of a lot of labor. You have to dig up the plant, bring a butcher's knife. You can just directly hear if they're there or if they're not. You can then use some machine learning algorithms. Some very smart folks, smarter than me, developed these things to then tell piece apart what types of insects, what species are you listening to?
Now, we're talking to microphones now, and with my experience with microphones, I think this has got to be a challenge because you're trying to record what I imagine is a very, very quiet sound where, say, the wind blowing through corn stalks is going to be much louder. So what does it take to get a microphone onto, say, a corn stalk or whatever plant that's going to hear and make out the details of these insects?
Yeah, so these are kind of different than these air microphones that we have that I'm talking into right now. These are clip-on contact microphones or guitar mics or piezoelectric microphones. So it's basically a little brass disc that has an electrode attached to it. And when the disc vibrates, as in when the corn stalk is vibrating from the wind or a bite sound or a rain event, right? That is then translated through the electrode into an electrical signal. And then that raw signal can start to be teased apart. Does it sound like an actual bite? Does it sound like a person is stuck in through a straw on this thing? Or is it just some wind and rain sounds?
Well, let's get a sense of what this sounds like. You supplied us with the sound. Now, this is a northern corn rootworm, I assume, munching away at the corn's roots.
I'll
go by the name here.
It is. It's a Diabrotica species.
Well, here's a listen. All right, so I'm hearing that background hum, that baseline hum, and then those clicking noises, I imagine, are our foes here. I was going to say our friends. Our foes, the northern corn rootworm.
They are, and there's actually two separate things that are happening over here. There's both a crunching, which is what we were getting in the middle of that sound bite, but also some tapping. So corn rootworms, in fact, anything in the Diabrotica species, uses its maxillary palps to literally bang on the corn plant. And they have chemoreceptors, so they can tell, you know, is there a lot of sugar in that corn plant? Are there kind of antifeedants or secondary metabolites, chemicals that the insect doesn't like? Is it the right time of day to be feeding? Even though they're under the ground, they actually feed at very specific times in the day. So in that big sound file, we can start to tease apart, are the insects feeding? Are they not feeding? If we separate out those crunches, we can start to say how many insects are out there.
And how big? I mean, we know that pests eat a lot of our crops around the world. The northern corn rootworm, for example, how big a problem is this?
So in the Midwest, in the Corn Belt, this has been called the billion-dollar pest.
Oh, wow.
So this is a serious economic issue. And one of the issues with this particular pest and this strategy is we don't really have a rescue treatment right now. So all we can do is say, okay, is it going to be a bad year? Is it going to be a good year? And then try to steer our corn plants for next year for this particular insect.
But something you mentioned is that part of what you're doing here isn't just, okay, are they there, but when are they active? Is that part of the hope that if we could say, okay, they they eat at midnight or they eat at dawn or whatever, that can start to point the road to solutions?
Absolutely. So that time of day is really, really important. When you have a pesticide or a biological control agent, a good bug, let's say, that predates or parasitizes that bad bug, that pest, you have this major piece of interaction time where that pesticide or that good bug needs to be at the right place at the right time. And if you don't know when that right time is, you could be expressing, let's say, BT, cryogenic protein type thing. You could be expressing that protein that's insecticidal at the wrong time so that the insect just won't encounter it.
So I would think maybe one possible outcome is, okay, well, if I want to make sure I'm getting these pests, I'm going to spray 3 times in a day, or I'm going to do more applications. If we can pinpoint the right time, does that mean ultimately we hope to use maybe fewer pesticides?
That's exactly what we're going after, more sustainable growing of food. And when you say fewer pesticides, I should also note that organic orchards, organic agroecosystems, they tend to use pesticides too, but they also, those pesticides tend to not be as effective, which means that bettering that timing or bettering that spacing, or even that saying, is this pest here or not, is really, really critical in that go, no-go decision-making process.
We're talking to Emily Bick, entomology professor at the University of Wisconsin. Madison, inventor of the insect eavesdropper. All right, you brought an eavesdropper with you. I don't know, if I saw this on a wall at a house, I might say it's kind of a big doorbell or something just from the outside casing. Describe it to us.
So we've 3D printed a case on the outside. You can look through the window on the case and see the screen and have some buttons, have some control over what's going on there. On the very back is a way to clip this case or this insect eavesdropper onto a stake or onto a tree or something. There's something grippy on the backside. But when you open the box, when you take the lid off, what you can see is a little Raspberry Pi or a computer on
a chip.
That's
a computer chip model, yeah.
Exactly. It's like 2 thumbtack boxes put together. That's about the right size. And that fully formed computer, although it's a little bit on the slow on the processing side, what it does is it says start, stop, and save. So it's starting the program. Attached to this Raspberry Pi is some storage. I can show you over here. We've got a storage place, a USB hub, and then 4 contact microphones, mm-hmm. as well as a way to power it through either solar or through a normal plug.
Yeah, we focused on that corn rootworm, but you're working with places not just in Wisconsin, I think, around the world. Can you tell us about some of the places that you're either currently working on or that are interested in the work you're doing on different kinds of crops?
Yeah, a postdoc in the Netherlands by the name of Sam Edwards, he's clipping on these microphones onto corn plants and looking at fall armyworm, which is a U.S. native invasive pest. It's native to the U.S. It's invasive across the world. And he's looking at some viruses. So he's infecting these armyworms with viruses. And he's able to differentiate, hey, look, is this virus taking? Is it not? What's the viral load? And I say he's testing this out right now. But he's essentially looking and seeing how the behavior of this insect is changing in response to that literal biocontrol virus in this case.
And how about closer to home? Are you working with farms or farm operations in our neck of the woods?
Yeah, so we right now are really focused on researchers. So we're doing a fair amount at Arlington Research Station as well as West Madison Research Station at UW-Madison. Those are kind of our farming operations. But closer to home, we handed this out to Brian McCormick's group. He's the department head at KSU, Kansas State University. And he's taking a look at labeling a whole bunch of soybean pests. So soybean aphid, soybean gall midge, potentially, trying to see what's going on within the soybeans.
Is there a hope that within X number of years, everyday farmers, people who own farms would say, yeah, I'm going to pick up a couple insect eavesdroppers, see what I got going on?
The hope is either farmers or really it might be crop consultants, that this type of sensor, instead of having to destructively take apart your crop, ruin that particular part of the field, this type of sensor might be able to be clipped on instead of through the Raspberry Pi computer on a chip, just through Bluetooth through your phone, and then folks can tell what's going on in their field. Now, alternatively, it could be run as a network, right? So we monitor monitor all of these sentinel corn crops around the U.S. We have sentinel chicken cages that we monitor for flu-type viruses. But instead of having a person go out and check once a week or every other week, we might be able to do this autonomously with these types of sensors.
Now, looking at this insect eavesdropper here, it sounds pretty high-tech, but it sounds like you've been working to get components that aren't particularly expensive. That's part of the strategy here?
That is. We really know that accessibility is important. So at this point, this box costs about $120. We're hoping eventually this type of thing will cost about $15 a microphone, so about half that. Part of it is we're buying these off-the-shelf components, but price is a huge issue. So we're trying to make this as accessible to folks as we possibly can.
So what's the next big stage in your research that you're... You'd like to fast forward and find the results right now.
Yes. Density. Trying to quantify the numbers of insects on a plant is the top question that we have. And that's coming straight out of my lab. The reason we care about those numbers is we use the density of insects or the numbers of insects feeding on a plant at a given time as a way to make economic decisions. So we got this fantastic grant from the USDA, NEFA, Data Science for Food and Agricultural Systems. This is in collaboration with Brian McCormick's group at KSU to try to see if we could figure out how many insects are actively feeding on a plant at once so that we can get a better sense of those numbers that we need for decisions.
When it comes to insect threats to crops, are there new ones emerging, or do we have just kind of the usual suspects that are already always working with?
European corn borer is the insect that was once old. It's now new again. It bores down the stalk of a corn plant. It can feed directly on the kernels. And as soon as GMO BT was introduced, that particular insect was significantly less of a problem. So we in Wisconsin don't really have an issue with European corn borer these days. However, resistance has been reported in Canada. It's been reported in Connecticut. We were part of a study this past summer trying to see if it's in the state of Wisconsin as well. And that's the real question, right? So is that pest about to make a major, major resurgence due to these resistance genes. But at the same time, we have something called soybean gall midge, which hasn't yet been found in the state of Wisconsin, actually hasn't been found on Wisconsin's borders yet, but it has been devastating places like Illinois and Iowa's soybeans.
Does it feel like you're in this evolutionary arms race? Sometimes we come up with a way to beat this pest and give it a surprisingly short amount of time to evolve a resistance?
Not only are we in that evolutionary arms race, we're also trying to do more with less, right? The Environmental Protection Agency, that EPA, is not certifying pesticides or new GMO traits as fast as it used to. It's putting up a few more barriers, a few more restrictions, you know, for good or for bad. Some folks will find these really useful. Some folks will find this not useful at all, right? But basically, it's taking tools out of the toolbox for farmers. And because of that, we need to do more with better data. We need to do more with less.
And that brings us back around to the insect eavesdropper. Is that one of the primary goals, to help people in part by tracking that timing of when insects are eating, do more with less?
Yes, exactly. So if we know exactly when and where the insects show up, then we can precisely target those insects. We can do that true precision agriculture approach. Versus right now, we tend to spray on a calendar, spray on some limited scouting data, just because scouting is so cost-effective and labor-intensive and really trained labor-intensive as well.
Emily, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Emily Bick runs the original digital entomology lab at the UW-Madison and is the inventor of the insect eavesdropper. Bick's an assistant professor of precision pest ecology and extension specialist for field and forage crops. Head over to WPR.org. There are some pictures of the insect eavesdropper in action.